Hello, and welcome to another edition of God Made Geek, Geek Made the Sculptor. I'm Alex Barnes.
My name's John Ross.
And we are back with another edition. We've got a great graphic novel for you guys today. We're trying to keep mixing it up here with season four. Mm-hmm. We've basically done one of everything now. We did our board game, our movie, our video game, and our graphic novel. Wow.
And what, sneak peek, what are we doing next?
A literative adventure.
You know what is the one thing that we haven't done that when we very first started the podcast we discussed doing?
Other podcasts.
Yeah. Which I still, part of it is because I don't think I've had any podcasts I've felt so passionate about, but at the same time,
mine are too niche. Or they're too big. You know what I mean?
It's like WTF. DF with Mark Maron.
Do you know about the KH Union? It's the mix of Final Fantasy Kingdom Hearts podcast every other week. I'm like, no, yeah. But that's okay.
I would love if we posted things, if we had a social media, I would love to post the list of ones we've almost done before.
True.
But it feels weird to talk about a podcast. It feels weird to review a podcast on a podcast.
Yeah, there's just something about it.
History of Rome. Ooh, that's why I wanted to
that
do a podcast.
That kind of got you going, yeah.
That is a great podcast.
Yeah, but what else are we going to do? Serial? I mean, come on.
Yeah. There's one called Cold that people don't really listen to. It's also a true crime one.
What was
one.
The one? Was it Lore something about the horror stories?
Lore started off really good and then got kind of iffy. I
can't review it.
I hope Aaron Mankey, the creator of Lore, is not a major fan. Aaron, I appreciate what you do.
Harsh.
He got an Amazon Prime TV show called
Lore. I don't know
Lore.
Why I thought you were going to say he had a DUI, but...
He had a big DUI.
Again, Aaron, I'm
Aaron,
so...
we are so sorry to out you.
I'm spreading vicious rumors at this point.
We do not mean to expose your DUI on here.
Well, I'll tell you who doesn't have a DUI, hopefully,
Scott McCloud. Yeah, Scott McCloud.
Yeah, he wrote and illustrated The Sculptor. Mm-hmm. It came out back in 2015.
Yeah.
And just a little fun fact, after you read it, you loved it so much that when you lost our annual Browns-Bengals bet, you bought it for me.
I did.
I didn't know it existed, and it was on my doorstep.
I don't remember. I think I asked for it as a Christmas gift, and I don't remember how I knew it existed either.
Yeah.
I knew Scott McCloud. I mentioned it at the end of last episode if people were listening, but Scott McCloud is a very cool dude. He's been writing comics for a long time. He literally wrote the comic book on how to make comics. It's called How to Make Comics, and it is a graphic novel that explains how to draw, like, not how to draw, but how to create and use comics.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of his calling card. He has understanding comics, reinventing comics, and like you said, making comics.
Okay, yes. I was going to say, I have, I feel like he combined all three of those.
Oh, is that what you're referencing then? The combined
maybe.
Work?
I'm not sure. I mean,
that's spanning 13 different years.
I feel like a part of that book's understanding comics. I might be just imagining it.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, he wrote some really good stuff and then wrote those how-to books. And then I believe this is kind of his first big return since making those how-to books. I may have just made that up. Barnes is looking at Wikipedia and might be able to correct me.
I'm trying to catch it right away, but it doesn't mention this one.
If I lied, I lied. Aaron Mankey has a DUI and Scott McCloud wrote this book right after this.
No, it looks like there was quite a potentially a break.
Yeah.
I can't get the timeline exact, though.
But I think that's how I caught onto it, because I loved understanding comics when I was really big into making comics. He was obviously a big name for me. And this is probably the last, like, significant graphic novel I've gotten. I kind of have fallen off of comic book reading in a big way.
Well, this is a nice one because it's completely self-contained.
Exactly.
It's just a one-hit. It's a thick boy.
So the premise...
Yes, please.
The premise is honestly a premise that didn't totally excite me at first. It is about a guy who is a sculptor who gains the ability to... he's kind of a failed artist, and he gains the ability to move any material with his hands and make it into whatever shape he wants. So, like, you can give him a concrete block and he could turn it into these beautiful curved lines, which, of course, is very difficult to do with something like concrete. How does he get this ability? Well, he makes a deal with Death. Death says, I'll give you 1 year to live, but I'm
less
going...
Less than 1 year.
Is it less than 1 year?
200 days.
You get 200 days to live, but you get this ability to create the most amazing art you've ever created. And the main character, I'm forgetting his name.
David.
Mm-hmm. David is kind of a bitter guy. He feels like he's earned the respect of the art community. He feels like he deserves the fame, and it's just not really working out for him. So honestly, the initial premise didn't excite me a ton, but Scott McCloud just so masterfully like takes that idea and, you know, anytime there's a high concept like that, the best versions of those stories are the ones where you realize very quickly that the high concept is not what it's about. It's about the person underneath it. And man, I don't want to get into spoiler territory, but it is a truly heart-aching graphic novel.
It is, yeah. It's very, it's touching, it's very emotional, and it plays to really all of David's senses and personality. It goes through a lot of hardships in his life. It goes through a lot in through his family, his friends, and just to put, it really pitches really, really well the frame of mind to be like, yes, you know, I'm 26 years old, but this is what I've done so far in my life. To have this already last hurrah and to have this amazing ability to maybe have some sort of lasting effect on people or the world or something, to just have 200 days to live, he's basically like, I'll take my chances.
Yeah.
Of course, that's when he finds people in his life that maybe makes you feel like you want to live.
Yes, exactly. It's there's a little bit of a love story in here, and yeah, he finds somebody that makes it much harder to give up the next, you know, give up in 200 days. Mm-hmm. And man, he hits so many topics. I feel like there was a lot I could relate to. David has a lot of aspects of, he's so busy wanting what he doesn't have that he never takes the time to realize what he does have.
Mm-hmm.
Like has this like really like saddening, not that this one doesn't relate to me quite as much, but a very saddening like desire to be famous. Like the adoration of strangers is more important to him than anything.
Right.
A very like sad, small character at the beginning who like he goes through a lot of life lessons, and it's not like by the end he's a perfect human. And like in fact you could argue he probably makes some like even more significant mistakes by the end.
Right.
But yeah, it hits on a lot of mental health as well.
Yes.
And how to deal with that, how to deal with loved ones that are going through that, how to deal with the loss of a loved one, making new friends when you are feeling like you're disconnecting from another group. Like in a lot of ways, it's kind of a coming of age story. But it's interesting because the main character is in his, I think, late 20s.
Yes.
At least I get that vibe.
Yeah, I think he's about 26. It's interesting. They really try to frame the story. Of course, right at the outset, you know you have this ticking timer going on in the back of everybody's head. So really, it just reads like one moment in his life. Mm-hmm. And it's 500 pages long.
Yeah.
It is 500 pages, and you are just completely engaged in him the entire time. And I think that the artwork is really well done, too. It's got a very interesting motif to the whole thing. I see, John, you're kind of paging through it right now. What kind of sticks out to you when you look at some of the illustrations?
Yeah, it's very interesting because some of them will be, like, I saw one where it's just a conversation as I'm, like, flipping through it, and it's very simple. It's nothing too special. But then there'll be these scenes where, again, he's got this, like, amazing power where he can shape any structure, any material he wants, however he wants. And, like, looking through some of them, like, it's truly, like, gorgeous what Scott McCloud has drawn. It's unexpected. It's creative. Like, really interesting stuff. Likewise, for anybody who's looking for, like, a big, like, bright, colorful comic, it falls more into the vein of, like, Blankets, which we've covered before.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly, like, Blankets is all just black and white. There's no other colors. He does have some blues in here, but it is primarily inked and very lightly colored. But yeah, I mean, he does some freaking gorgeous stuff in here.
Yeah, it's a lot of blue. It's but there's a lot of emotion. It's not like it's all depression and melancholy. I think it's interesting that you'll see a lot of joy happening between the characters and a lot of this blossoming relationship while still with the blue motif. They don't really change that at all.
Yeah.
It's hard to get into the ending. It's very powerful, I think, on an emotional level. Could you even describe how you kind of came away with it? Like, what kind of stuck with you that led you to, you know, kind of wanting to talk about it today and get other people to read it?
Yeah, I think, so like I said, the initial premise didn't, like, blow me away. It really took me, like, I enjoyed the book throughout. I, probably with every page, I enjoyed it more and more. Like, it just kept growing. And those last 100 pages, man, they rocked my world. I remember I fell asleep, or I was reading it. My girlfriend had fallen asleep on the couch, and I was reading it. And, like, it ended up being very personal for me and, like, very, like, a very weird experience. I think to summarize one of the really big motifs in the of it is, like I mentioned earlier, like, you're so focused on, like, what you don't have, you don't focus on what you have, right? And that kind of spins into, if you're always looking in the future or always looking in the past, like, mm-hmm. you can't be present.
Yeah.
And that every present moment of, like, all of existence is, like, there's so many things happening in every single tiny moment. And this book, like, it plays with that idea a lot. And as it gets towards the end, it hits it so hard and, like, in such a gut-wrenching way. And, like, honestly, I remember I woke up my girlfriend. We went and laid down in bed, and I couldn't sleep because all I could think about was that idea of just, like, every yeah. moment is, like, so precious and, like, so many things. There's so many possibilities in every moment. And it really, like, it stuck with me. Like, I can't say that I don't always think about that idea in relation to the book, but that is an idea that has just, like, stuck in my head since reading it. Of
yeah.
I tend to look ahead and look behind way more often than I look at what I'm doing in the moment.
Yeah.
And, like, taking that time to just sit back and look around and, like, appreciate what's happening right then and there really, really affected me, Barnes.
Yeah, it is really big. I mean, just, like, really existing in a moment, like, really just being present and making sure that you're doing everything you can while at the same time not knowing, like, which is taught in so many other ways, you know, not knowing what anyone else around you is going through, because while he's going through all of this, like, he does still interact with other people. It's not just him and this other person. And he does have many conversations with the personification of death, which was
yeah.
his uncle in the book. But there's still just run-ins with other people and going to social events and parties and that. And it's like, no one knows this guy has this bet with death. No one knows that he has this
yeah, he has sub power, 200 you know? Days to live.
But it doesn't matter to them. And so he's trying to just deal with everything. Yeah. You know, all at the same time.
Yeah, right. And it's like, you know, he took the 200 days because it was going to make him famous. He was going to be known forever.
Exactly.
And it's just like realizing how much he can do in those 200 days, both professionally, but also, like, from an emotional level, the connections he can make in 200 days, and also right. realizing it's just not enough time.
I do wonder what the actual, I mean, famous sculptors of our millennia, past, you know, we still talk about these guys, you know, Da Vinci and these, you know, Michelangelo mm-hmm. and talking about all these sculptures in the Sistine Chapel and all these famous things. Like, were they conscious of that? Were they thinking that? Or is, you know, that I know their name 500 years later? Is that anything? Or is it just a fact in a history book?
Right.
Did he just want to be a line in a history book? Or does he, you know, his name on a plaque? He's never going to know that. He's never going to see that.
I always wonder, I think about it a lot, but do you have to give up, like, I don't know, not that you have to give up, but, like, you have to be very driven to be famous. Like, mm-hmm. there's no doubt about it. And, like, there's no doubt that if you're going to have that drive, that there's a lot of parts of your life where your drive and your career have to come first. Like, it's yeah. just... I think it's very rare somebody can accomplish the feats that are required of you to become a famous person, right? Unless you give that up. But also, like, I mean, if you're going back far enough for, like, Da Vinci and stuff, it's like, well, there's celebrities, but not in the way we have them now, you know?
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Maybe you can just truly enjoy your art and, like, be a normal person
right.
And, like, have a normal home life, but... I think it's a very interesting concept of, like, can you can you have it all? Like, can you have a, I don't know, everybody's situation is different, but like, you know, the family life, the quiet life, but also have all of the fame you want.
Yeah. Can you, and then do you even have a choice at that point?
Right. You truly exactly. Do have that. If you fall in love fame. With somebody and you're young and you want to become famous, you can't. There are definitely ways you can balance it. And maybe both of you have your own career goals and like it's, yeah. You're both driven, so it's not so difficult. But for a lot of people, it's kind of a choice. You know, do I want, I can put all of my, not all, but most of my energy into one or the other. And sometimes it's a choice.
Right.
Interesting stuff.
Well, it feels like death is imminent. It's not, but in his case, it was.
Yeah.
And that's that ultimate dilemma that we don't really ever have to really face. But it's like, no, he really is going to be at 26 in this position now.
Yeah.
And we're, well, you're not. You just had your birthday.
I'm 26. I'm a big man now.
Yeah, you're 27. You've lived past all this drama.
Yeah. I'm kind of over it. I'm just ready to, I'm settling down. You know that I'm 27.
Well, do you have?
I'll probably bounce back at 28.
Yeah, well, yeah. Late 20s are all
big party time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've heard.
That's what they say.
I think we stopped talking about the comic. I think we just started talking about life, Barnes.
But that's what the comic makes you do.
It does. That's what it is. It is just so darn good. Barnes, I think it's time to do some closing thoughts.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think this is a really wonderful book. I think it's worth a read. I think a lot of people can draw different things out of it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different moments to really connect, I think, with not just the main character David, but a lot of the different characters. Mm-hmm. I think Meg is a really interesting character. I don't know if we gave her really enough time.
Yeah.
But I think that she and her roommate Sam really do a great job of taking care of each other and just kind of how hard it can be to really let someone in on all levels.
Yeah.
So I think that there's just a lot of moments and a lot of opportunities to find something that you'll be able to take with you for quite a while after reading this. And I think it's a really easy read. It looks beautiful, and don't let the size of it intimidate you.
Yeah. As with all graphic novels, if it looks big, it takes not too much time to read. Yeah. Yeah. I think I got through it in like three or four. I think it's broken up into four parts, and I think I read it in four sit-downs. I read a sit-down. But yeah, I agree. Some really phenomenal characters that we didn't really talk on, because at the end of the day, the entire thing is from the perspective of David. But you know, there are some really great... You can tell Scott took the time to think through every character he wrote, and they all have very different life situations. But I can't recommend it enough. Like, I think it's not a comic I think about every day, but it taught me some lessons that I do think about every day, or at least try to. Yeah. And isn't that what art and literature, poetry, all these things are for, Barnes? It's to get you to think. It's to get you to see the world through a different lens. And I think this is I'll say a damn near perfect example of exactly that. It is a great example of art that is both entertaining and forced me to see the world in a lens that I didn't see it through before. And that might be personal and unique to me because I share a lot of the same issues as David, but I think it could do it for everybody.
I agree.
Wow.
Let's do some thanks.
I'm a little emotional right now.
It's a big moment.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, that's how you describe the end of reading the book the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I would reread it, honestly.
It's
only been about a year, but I would honestly reread it pretty much right now.
Right now. I'm going to stay here down here in Studio G. I'm just going to stay here with the lights on.
You're just going to hang out overnight.
All right. We got thank yous. Thank yous to Alex Moore for doing that graphic. Thank yous to Adam Sko for doing that music. Thank yous to listeners for doing that listening.
And always feel free, listeners, this is a two-way street. Communication is key. Yes. Leave us a comment. Write us a review.
Send us a text.
Tweet at us. Yeah, send us a text. You know our numbers.
Yes.
At GMGGMS. Tweet at us. Let us know what you're into. We just might cover it on a future podcast.
Yep.
Next week. Literature.
Ah, yes. The finest usage of words.
Ah, the crisp paper.
We will be doing a piece of literature by a man named Steven Erickson. And it's a book called Gardens of the Moon, which, if anybody is familiar with it, would know it is the first of 10 books. And, oh boy, each book's a whopping 1,200 pages, roughly.
Hubba, hubba.
I have read the entire series. It took me 3 years. And Barnes
has
read the first book.
Yep.
So we're going to start with the first book, and gosh, maybe by season 7 or 8, we will be able to cover them all. We'll probably do them one by one. We might combine them from here and there. But speaking of a series that got me to look through a different lens and is entertaining while it's at it, but also gave me a lot of headaches as I tried to learn many characters' names in different countries. But yes, look for that. I would say try and read it before you listen to the next episode, but if you are able to accomplish that, you probably skipped work and you're a very fast reader. But yeah, that's all we have. I'm saying goodbye. Bye.
Bye.